Do you know what time it is? It's supernatural story time. And if you're easily scared, and even if you're not, there's only one thing left to do. Just turn off the lights, because these are stories that you listen to only in the dark. The Haunted Fixer Upper. I bought a house in Brighton in Sussex. It was built in 1877. It had originally been owned by a policeman who bought it when it was newly built, and then his spinster daughter lived in it. She also died in it. It was in a dreadful state and took 3 months to get one room, the kitchen and bathroom, habitable. We moved in and spent another 6 months getting the rest of the house together. My husband restores old buildings, making them as they were originally. We even took all the old paint and wallpaper off the walls and framed a section of the original William Morris wallpaper, which had been varnished. They did that in Victorian society in order to preserve the wallpaper. Well, once we had furnished up the place and we settled back to enjoy it, some very odd things started to happen. When we had moved in, a beautiful tabby cat had moved in with us. We don't know where she came from, but she was a wonderful creature. One night, I woke up very suddenly, totally witless with fright. My side of the bed was surrounded with freezing cold air. I lay unable to do anything, but I reached out for my cat, who slept on the bed, and the freezing air started to warm up, and my terror subsided. After that, I acquired 4 more cats, all strays who came in through the cat flap and wouldn't go away. And we would be sitting in front of the TV, and suddenly all 5 cats would turn and stare intently at one place in the room, and then all turn away again at the same time. I had plants hanging from the ceiling and macrame holders, and sometimes they would sway violently as if someone was brushing very hard against them. A friend came to visit for the evening, went up to the bathroom during the course of the evening, and then came rushing down, grabbed his girlfriend by the arm, and rushed out. He said he had seen a ghost on the landing upstairs, and he wasn't staying another minute. Another night, we were sitting in front of the TV with a cup of coffee, each on the coffee table, and something or somebody knocked very hard on it twice. I do know that the old spinster, whose name was Grace, had died in the house. Perhaps she liked having the house restored and made beautiful again. I was trying to tell her she liked it that way with the animals. She had had a dog. Another time I was at Hampton Court with my husband. In case it helps, I will tell you that Hampton Court was acquired by Henry VIII of England from one of his cardinals, whom he felt was getting a bit too wealthy and powerful. Anyway, Henry had just got rid of his first wife and was in the process of acquiring his second one when he got Hampton Court. Henry was a man driven by his own needs and invented a conscience in order to placate his own sense of right and wrong. He knew he was wrong in divorcing his first wife, but his conscience said it was okay because he needed a male heir, and so he went ahead and married Anne Boleyn, but she gave him trouble, so he had her beheaded and married Jane Seymour, who died in childbirth. So he married Anne of Cleves, whom he thought was very ugly. He called her the Flanders mare, so he decided to marry to please himself and married an 18-year-old girl called Catherine Howard. The enemies of the family of Howard cooked up some schemes to make Henry think that Catherine was playing him false, and so he had her beheaded. I'm sorry about all this history lesson, but I had to tell you so that what happened to me makes sense. My husband and I were walking along a corridor. We were the only people there at that time. I was looking out of a window down on a cookhouse in the courtyard. My husband was about 12 feet away. I felt a hard rap on the top of my head, and I looked at him and said, "What did you do that for?" He was still standing 12 feet away examining a painting. "Do what?" he said. It was quite apparent he had not hit me on the head. We walked down the corridor and round the corner and came across a guide. My husband told him what had happened. The guide said, "I'm not surprised. Catherine Howard ran down that corridor screaming to Henry VIII not to let her be beheaded. So he was praying in this chapel just here. She tried to attract people's attention occasionally. I was that people on that occasion." I moved to a new home 25 miles away from Brighton. It is in the middle of undisturbed countryside down a private lane and was built in 1870. One evening I was washing dishes and saw a very thin, tall old man, dressed in black, walk through the wall next to the front door at an oblique angle. After that, I saw him quite a few times, walking in and out where there is now a wall. but where there was once the back door to the house. Then I started to see an old lady who looks a bit like a grandma out of the Waltons, only taller and with wider hair. She keeps walking through the fence toward some old outhouses that used to be toilets. There's a corner in our lounge room that is permanently freezing cold, even if we have the central heating on and a fire going. We have a huge ingle nook fireplace that about 6 people could sit in, but it doesn't matter how warm the room is, that bit always stays cold. The thin man in our house. This is a true story. I'm a very normal person. I'm 42 years old with a very loving wife and 2 wonderful daughters who are 6 and 18 months. We built our home in 1989 after a couple of years. When my oldest daughter was 2, we noticed that she was seeing people that we could not see. I remember we drove in our basement, and on the way up the stairs, my daughter Lee was standing at the foot of the stairs waving. My wife asked her who she was waving at, and she told my wife, pointing towards the wall, "That woman standing over there." We dismissed the idea by assuming she had a vivid imagination. A couple of years later, I was up late on Christmas Eve playing Santa, putting a dollhouse together. I had locked myself in the guest bedroom in fear of my daughter waking up. The doorknob rattled. I looked at it and it moved back and forth. Someone was trying to open it. I knew it must be my daughter, so I quickly turned off the lights and waited a few moments and then opened the door. As I walked out the door, I felt a very cold spot. I checked on my wife and daughter, and they were asleep. I had no explanation for this. It has been 3 years since that Christmas Eve. So now here is the current events. My oldest started the first grade this year. The night before her first day back to school, we went to bed together at 9:30 in the evening. About an hour later, after we had drifted off to sleep, my wife ran in the room and asked if I had gone outside. I said no. She said she heard the front door slam. I heard nothing, but of course I was asleep. I went back to sleep, and at 11:30 she came in and woke me up and said it slammed again. I thought she was hearing things. The next night she woke me up after having a bad dream of someone chasing her and she had cut her arm. She raised out of bed into a sitting position, and in front of the foot of her bed was a glowing ball of embers, as she described it, which hovered and rotated, emitting a beam of light towards her, similar to a beam from a flashlight, except it was red. She ran in my room and told me. I thought she was really going crazy. The next couple of days, she was awakened by the doorknob rattling. And the next night, as she lay in bed falling asleep, she heard 3 hard knocks on the bedside table. She was too afraid to look over to see what it was. By this time, I thought she was really losing it. The next night, I was down in our basement working out. I heard children's footsteps. I thought it was my daughter coming down to play while I was down there. I was lying on the bench press with weights on top of me. I raised my head up and I saw a girl, and as she passed by, I could see wrinkles on her face. It was as if she had turned old in mid-stride. I sat the weights back on the bar and raised up, but no one was there. We hired a trance channeler to come and rid our house of these spirits. She spent about 3 hours in our basement. She talked to the girl. She said she was sent as a messenger to help some spirits cross over into the next plane of reality, and that there were children involved. She said she could not elaborate, but she had moved several spirits across to the next plane. She also said that the spirit of the old-looking woman had started to turn younger and younger and more beautiful as she looked at her. She gave my wife and my daughter a crystal rock and some sage to burn. Everything was quiet for a few weeks. Now we have a thin man who breathes heavily in our house. My only question is, where are they coming from? The cowboy at the bus stop. I'm a local resident of Silicon Valley, here in the south end of the San Francisco Bay Area, where everything is high-tech and obsolete after 6 months of life. I was born and raised here, and I'm a design engineer. Everything has some level of logic attached to it, or else it doesn't exist. Except this. One night, about 10 years ago, I was driving home from a friend's house at about 3 a.m. on the El Camino Real, a very busy street. 3 lanes going either direction, retail businesses stacked together on both sides for many miles on end. At 3 a.m., there's not too many people out. In fact, it was very quiet, but very well lit. Approaching an intersection, I noticed a man dressed up as a cowboy with his foot up on a bus stop bench, leaning into it very naturally. The light changed. I drove past him and his eyes caught mine from about 50 or 100 feet away. As I drove past, his gaze kept up, as if he was staring straight through my eyes, so intense that the image is burned as bright as day in my memory, as if it was last night. I turned back a few times, and his gaze never left my eyes. I remember saying to myself out loud, "Dude, there isn't going to be a bus. It's 3 a.m. There's a lot of people around here that dress like cowboys. I really don't know why there are no cows around here." Only difference was this guy had a full beard, the kind that goes all the way down your neck, as if he hadn't shaved in many years. He also had the type of jeans on that are tight in the knees and loose around the boots. Definitely not the local cowboy style. Well, a couple of years later, there was an article in the local newspaper about haunted buildings in California. One of them was listed as a big toy store here in the South Bay. The toy store supposedly had a resident poltergeist that all the employees supposedly acknowledged was absolutely there. Yeah, right. Great publicity. I'd never heard of this before and I didn't believe it. I'm an engineer. Everything is logical. A local psychic named Sylvia Brown had done a seance in the toy store and had taken many pictures, regular and infrared. A couple of photos supposedly had images. I saw them. When I saw one of the images, I was floored. It looked exactly like the guy I saw that night. An image of a cowboy leaning against a toy store shelving unit, one foot propped up to the side, casually observing the group of people in the store. Full beard, cowboy hat, jeans tied around the knees, and then I remembered something. The bus stop is right in front of the toy store. History records that a ranch hand had died approximately where the store is built in the 1800s. He was sharpening an axe, cut his leg real bad and bled to death near that spot. I don't know, but I do remember that guy as clear as day. And I'm pretty sure that that is the toy store ghost waiting at the bus stop. Ghost of Okinawa. I have so many stories about Okinawa, I don't know where to begin. Okinawa Island is a few hundred miles from the island of Taiwan in Japan mainland. It is located in the far west Pacific Ocean, and it was the site of one of the largest battles during World War II. It was once an island country unto itself, but has been fought over for many centuries by Japan and China. It was captured near the end of the war by U.S. forces, and it remained U.S. property for many years until the late 1970s, in which it was returned to Japan as a show of good faith. Many of the stories I'm about to tell you happened after World War II. Many years ago, as the story goes, a middle-aged man lived down by the China Sea in an area the U.S. military calls the Gate 4 area. This man owned a small and somewhat successful candy store. Every night just after dusk, he would count the money he had made for the day, close up for the night, and go home to his wife and children. One night, as he prepared to close the store and count the money, a young and pretty woman had entered his store. He tried to tell her he was closed, but she insisted that she must buy some candy for her baby. Both Japanese and Okinawans loved their children very much to the point of spoiling them. Knowing how she must felt, he agreed to sell her some. She bought the candy and then left the store. The man then put the money down and began to count all of his earnings. When he was about finished, he noticed that some of the money was not good currency. Some was the money the Japanese and Okinawans give at the shrines to the deceased. This puzzled him greatly. Where did he receive the shrine money from? Slightly puzzled, he went home. The next night, when he was about to close for the night, the same woman appeared in the store. Remembering that she had come into the store the night before, he asked her if he could help her. She asked for some candy for her baby. Again, she made the purchase and left the store. And like the night before, when he went to count the money, there was shrine money there. He went home for the night confused. On the third night, about the same time as the other two nights, the woman appeared and asked to buy more candy. This time the storekeeper held onto the money until she left. When she did, he opened his hand and saw shrine money. He quickly tried to follow her. He saw her go down the street and make a turn. When he rounded the corner, she was nowhere to be seen. He turned to walk back to his store when he heard a small cry. He quickly went to one of the shrines he had heard the noise from. There was another small cry. Quickly, he left to tell the police. When they got back, they too heard the noise. They decided it would be best if they opened it up. When they did, they found the corpse of a young woman and a baby, which was very alive. They took the baby from the arms of the dead woman and reported it to the family who owned the shrine. They had informed the police that their daughter had died while being pregnant. From this time on, the Japanese and Okinawans did not leave shrine money, but instead leave real currency. It should be noted that on Okinawa, they do not have cemeteries. Instead, they have shrines built, much more like tombs, and that they are placed everywhere. Where I lived off base, my house was just 3 blocks away from about 40 of them. Some people live between them or across the street from them. Highway 12. This is a story about an area known here by the U.S. military as 400th Area or AMMO. The 400th Area is a large zone in which we keep our armaments. There are lots of roads, very few buildings, and tons of jungle. The jungle makes up over 70% of the area. After the Battle of Okinawa, many Marines were doing cleanup of the Japanese forces. In the area now known as 400th, a small platoon of soldiers marched down a small road back to base camp. They were tired, hungry, and eager for some well-earned rest. They marched down this road in column formation, not really trying to be quiet because they had felt this sector was cleared and safe. There was a shout as the first bullet pierced the silence. They had marched right into an ambush. The road, not being more than a few feet wide and having high slopes on both sides, the American troops were not much conditioned to fight or run. They began to fire back into the jungle. It was a fierce battle, but in the end, all the U.S. troops were killed. Many Japanese soldiers were killed also. Almost 3/4 of them had perished. Many years later, the U.S. government decided to build an ammunition dump in this area. They made many roads, and as a security measure, standard military and security police patrol the area for intruders. The first sighting was a few years after the 400th was built. The U.S. forces named each road. The name of the road was Highway 12. One night, while patrolling his zone, a military policeman noticed something moving ahead of him on the road. As he drove down, he started to hear gunshots. That is when he saw his first ghost. Years later, reports from police, security, and workers were of hearing gunshots or screams while driving down that road at night. There was one reported incident of a military policeman driving through the apparitions. Now, I tried to investigate some of the sightings here on the island. My friend, who's a military policeman, took me through this area many different times. According to rumors, if you drive up this road from south to north, there's a chance that you will hear something or see something, maybe even both. I've tried and failed so far, but I did find this out. Many people who work or guard the 400th area will not drive alone unless the car radio is playing. My wife, who works out in this area, will not drive there alone if she can help it, and I can't blame her. The apparition in the hills. My brother and I were sleeping in one bed located at the top of the stairs on the second floor. My brother woke me up at about 2 a.m. scared to death. He said that he had awoken to see a dark shape standing over him, staring at him. He said it stood there for a while and then turned and walked down the stairs to the first floor. We lay there awake until about 4 a.m. when we heard the coffee pot going and movement in the kitchen. We got up and went downstairs to the kitchen where our mother was up and very agitated. My mother said she woke up hearing footsteps coming down the stairs. As the steps got to the floor, they turned and walked towards her room. She thought it was our grandmother. When the steps got to her doorway, a black shape passed through the curtain in the doorway and stopped over her, looking down at her. She said, "Be gone in the name of Jesus." The shape groaned and disappeared. She said she felt a great deal of evil from the apparition. That morning, our mother took us elsewhere to stay. It was many years before we spent the night in that house again. This story is absolute fact and has haunted my brother, mother, and myself for nearly 40 years. I'm still afraid of the dark. Although I did not personally see it, I know my brother did, and I saw the shape my mother was in after seeing it. 3 innocents who saw us separately. It is the truth. The black creature by the stairs. When I was about 8 or 9, I was at a friend's house in my hometown in Ohio. We were playing with his Star Wars figures, and I noticed what I thought was a black cat. I asked my friend when his parents had gotten him a cat. He stated, "We don't have one." He seemed a little agitated at my question, so I went into the hall, and there it was again, right by the stairs leading down to the living room. I said, "Well, what is this then?" When he came into the hallway, it dashed down the stairs. He naturally didn't see it and looked even more upset. His mother was sitting down in the living room and I called down to her to see if she had seen the cat. She was extremely upset and told us to go back into my friend's room and stop playing around the stairs. I was supposed to spend the night that night, but my parents showed up about a half hour later and took me home. I never really knew why. I figured I'd upset his mother somehow and she was just mad at me or punishing him for playing by the stairs. Several years later, when I was about 18, the event at home got my mother and I into a discussion about several things, and she proceeded to tell me the story that to this day still scares me. Evidently, their house had been possessed, haunted, whatever. My parents are very religious, and my friend's family attended the same church. There had been black creatures of varying sizes that had been terrorizing the family. The origin had almost always been the bathroom mirror, which was right next to my friend's bedroom. They had been attacked several times. What I had seen was one of these creatures, one of the most violent, from what they said. His mother had called my mother in a panic. They had never appeared to anyone but family members until now. I learned that later that week, the pastor and several deacons from the church had gone to their house to try and exorcise the house. They were also violently attacked, and one person became possessed by one momentarily, and they had to leave. They apparently had no further problems from then on, but every time I go by that house, I get this sinking feeling like it's watching as you go by, or something is watching. What brought me and my mother into this discussion was odd as well. I had several times when I was at home alone up in my room, and I heard the kitchen cabinets open and close, sounds of glasses and the fridge opening. I would assume someone was home and go down to see who was there. No one was home. Nothing had been disturbed. Anyway, I was in my last month of high school and came home. Our house is a two-story with a basement. We would enter the house from the back door because the garage next to the back edge of the house, when you walk into the back door, you came into a landing on a staircase hall. The hall went up into the kitchen area to the left and went down into the basement to the right. You couldn't see directly into the next room of the basement. The stairs ended above the sub pump, and the room was off to the left from the bottom. When I came into the back door, I looked to my right as I came in because someone looked around the corner, casually as if to see who was home, and then went back into the basement. The basement lights were on. I went up into the kitchen and my mother was sitting at the table working on a cake. I asked her who was in the basement because I thought it was her. She said, "No one." I said, "Well, someone just looked at me from down there and the lights are all on." We went and looked, and they were off. We went down, and no one was there. I told her about the other things that had been happening in the house, and she seemed kind of skeptical. For some reason, she may have thought it was the creatures. I don't know. But she told me all about the creatures at my friend's house. I was so upset about whatever it was that looked at me from the basement that I don't really know how the conversation got there. It just drifted in that direction. But there have been other events that have made me believe in ghosts, demons, or whatever they are. There is something there, maybe a natural extension of us after we die. It may be evil or the devil, I don't know. I've found out that if I leave them alone and just take them with a bit of humor and a grain of salt sometimes, that I have on the whole been left alone. I haven't had an experience in about 4 years. Could it be because I moved out from my parents' house? A house with a history of evil. For years, while I was growing up, I never liked to go to my grandparents' home. Though I loved my grandparents dearly, we were very close, I dreaded spending the night at their house. Rarely did I spend more than one night over there without going home. There was something eerie about that house. 2 years ago, at our Christmas gathering, I discovered it had quite an undesirable history. It was Christmas, and my paranormal experiences were confirmed by several members of my family. We were talking in the living room when my mother came in and asked, "Whose baby is in the dining room?" Since nobody had a baby at the party, several women went in to check. The baby crawled in the middle of the floor and faded away in front of my aunts. They came back a little shaken up and told me and my brothers what happened. We got to talking about all our experiences in that house. By the way, there was an infant who died in that house years ago. My grandparents live in a big four-story house built around the turn of the century. It has a large cement porch on the front of it. All my life, when I entered the basement and went to the cellar Directly under the porch, I would get a sharp mental image of a man, blue and with a bleeding forehead. It was just an image, and I avoided that part of the basement. Many years later, while talking to my mom and aunts who grew up in the house, one of the first owners of the house was involved in the mafia. He disappeared one day when shortly after the porch was built. To this day, I am trying to convince my grandparents to let me dig under the porch. The more frightening experience I had was in my uncle's old room. When I was 17, my grandparents left me alone in the house for a few hours. While they were gone, I grew nuts and decided to confront my fears and explore the big house. I went upstairs to get to the attic, which the stairwell is through my uncle's room. I hated to go into my uncle's room, even with my grandfather in the daytime. As I stood in the stairwell, I got another sharp mental image of a teenager hanging himself at that very spot. At the Christmas party, my grandma told me a teenager had hung himself in the stairwell to the attic. My uncle also told me something would rip his sheets off his bed at night and told him to leave the room. It was the teenager's room. My aunts and mother also told me they were the spirits of an elderly couple who had died in the house. They had occupied my grandparents' bedroom. That could be why I always felt like I was being watched when I went in there. These ghosts and the ghosts of the baby were frequently seen by my aunts, mother, and uncle. I am the only one who has seen visions of the dead owner of the house. The only room I felt safe in was my mother's old room. I didn't know it was her room. I told her I was not afraid in this room, and she said it was her old room. She blessed it with an angel that she said protected her. I believe that angel is still there, for that room provides a strange calmness and a refuge from the evil in the rest of the house. In all, a lifetime of unpleasant experiences were discussed that night by our family. On one hand, it felt good to finally tell someone. On the other hand, I'm shocked at the bad history associated with that house. The dead here still walk. The story I'm about to tell scares the hell out of me just trying to recall it up from my memories. Some things are best left dead and buried. I have experienced many moments of terror at the hands of the supernatural. It all began in 1992 when I moved into a house in Ohio, a small town in the southern tip of the state. I moved into this old house that was over 100 years old. At first, things were normal, considering getting used to the creaks and groans of an older house when settling after the sun sets. About 2 weeks after I experienced my first encounter, I had just finished watching a late night show and proceeded with shutting up the house for the night. It was early October and the night air was beginning to get chilly, so I shut the windows I had open and went into the kitchen to shut the lights off. The kitchen had a basement door in it, and as I reached for the light switch, I heard distinctive footsteps climbing the old wooden steps, ascending from the musty, damp basement. I froze and listened as the footsteps continued to slowly walk up to the kitchen. Up until this moment, I had never felt so scared in my life. I knew it couldn't have been a burglar or anything like that, for there were no windows or doors in the basement save for the one in the kitchen. Finally, the footsteps stopped at the landing at the top of the steps, and I watched in disbelief as a doorknob turned and the old wooden door slowly opened and slammed shut with an ear-shattering slam. I was there long enough that night to notice that no one stepped through the doorway. I quickly grabbed my jacket and left to go stay with a relative for the remainder of the night. As time went on, I heard the footsteps and the door open and shut on several occasions. It still bothered me, but I was determined not to let this drive me out of this beautiful old house. As you will see, this was just the tip of the iceberg as far as the haunting goes. I did some research on the history of the house, and to my surprise, I discovered in 1956 that a murder-suicide took place there. As told to me by several of longtime residents of the community, what had happened was a couple by the name of Gilbert had lived there in the 50s, and the husband had caught his wife cheating on him, and in a crime of passion, he slit his wife's throat as she slept, and right afterwards went to the basement and hung himself. The official record stated that he was found hanging from the basement beams, covered in his wife's blood, and the knife used in the murder lay on the floor below his dangling corpse. After learning of these events, it was difficult to say the least not to think about the hideous deeds that this house harbored. About a month after the encounter at the basement door, I had friends from out of town over for the weekend. It was an extended weekend due to the Memorial Day holiday. This was their first visit to my new house, and due to the circumstances, I purposely held back any information on what I had learned and encountered for fear of scaring them away, and it also gave me the chance to get feedback from an unbiased source. Joe and Sally arrived late Friday night. We drank coffee and chatted until 1 a.m. and then turned in for the night. Around 3:30 a.m. I was awakened by a scream. Joe and I found Sally in the hallway, shaking uncontrollably. After getting her calmed down, we found that on her way to the bathroom, she saw a woman in white coming towards her in the hallway, and in her own words, her throat had looked as if it had been torn away. That was the last night they stayed in my home. I can't say I blame them. The final event which drove me from this house happened late one night before going to bed. I went through my usual routine of showering and shaving. I stood shaving, peering into the foggy mirror, when a figure appeared behind me. It was the woman's husband. I saw an almost blank look in his eyes, as if he was looking past me, and his mouth was agape as if moaning a silent cry. I never ran so hard in my life. I gathered a few necessities and fled the house for the final time. I came back about a week later with friends and gathered my belongings, never to return again.